It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
All right, and a fine Friday it is, and I would like to welcome, we have a very special guest calling in today, a fellow by the name of Richard Gage, and Richard Gage is the man behind the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. They have a website you can go to, ae911truth.org. And Richard, welcome to 2A Radio.
Thank you so much. It's awesome to be here with you, Bill.
Well, you know, Richard, I am very happy that you're able to come on. I have certainly seen a number of the videos on YouTube and read a number of the things online. I myself am a 9/11 truther. Truth be told, I really thought that some of the truther sort of movements that were going on, even as recent as a couple of years ago, were pretty far off out into left field. Until I started preparing my own 2A radio show for 9/11 a couple of years back, and I wanted to do a lot of research when I do my special shows for Independence Day, Memorial Day, things such as that, I put in a lot of research. And I have to tell you, what it came down to was the popular story that the government and the media has fed to us couldn't possibly have happened. And that is something that you looked at as an architect, am I correct?
That's right.
Tell us
your
story.
4 years ago. Huh?
Go ahead. Tell us your story. Tell us how you got in on this.
Yeah, it was remarkable. I'm an architect of 20 years here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and 4 years ago I was listening to a radio program on my way to a construction observation, and lo and behold, there's this gentleman named David Ray Griffin, a researcher who's written 9 books now on this subject, who was talking about all of these first responders who were recorded by their chief fire commissioner in New York on 9/11. Well, they were recorded a month after, talking about their experiences on 9/11, and they heard sounds of explosions. They saw flashes of light at the onset of the destruction of both of these buildings. And I was just floored listening to this testimony because I hadn't heard any alternative explanation as to how these towers came down. Well, I did a little more research after that and found all of this evidence that was not in the official reports by NIST, not told to us by the media or our government. And it is absolutely extraordinary. For instance, I knew nothing about the third worst structural failure in modern history. This is a 47-story skyscraper, World Trade Center Building 7, about a football field in length away from the North Tower.
You know, I remember this one. This is the one that came down way later in the day with very little structural damage.
It wasn't hit by an airplane, and it had small scattered fires as a result of some of the damage from the beams hitting it from the World Trade Center North Tower earlier that morning. And, at 5:20 in the afternoon, all of a sudden, this building goes straight down, smoothly, suddenly, symmetrically, into its own footprint at freefall acceleration.
It does. Richard, hold on just a moment. We're headed into the first break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, folks. Stay tuned. We have special guest Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth interviewing on the line. Folks, we'll be right back right after this break. You're listening live with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
You're listening to 2A Radio with Bill Carnes.
All right, folks, welcome back from the break. Again, we have Richard Gage on the line. Just as we were headed into the break, Richard, we were just starting to touch on WTC7 that came down at 5:20 p.m. with very little damage and just some small scattered fires from debris that had hit the building earlier in the day. We were just on that, so carry on.
Yeah, now, the fascinating thing is not only does this building go straight down and suddenly, but it then accelerates straight down through the path of what was greatest resistance. The thousands of tons of structural steel in this building, 40,000 tons, and it's five times stronger than this building needed to be. If there was any collapse, which we're told was due to normal office fires, by the official reports that came out 7 years later, we would have expected fires to cause, if there was going to be a collapse at all, and by the way, there's never been a collapse of a steel frame skyscraper due to fires, even though there's up to 100 examples of very hot, large, and long-lasting fires. Not one has ever collapsed.
Yeah, that's amazing. You would think that this would not have been the first, and it certainly wouldn't be the last, but in fact, it was the first, and so far it's been the last.
Yeah, steel frame skyscrapers are extremely robust, redundantly designed, massive quantities of steel, which is a huge heat sink, which draws the source of heat away from the center throughout the structure, so they never heat up to their critical failure point. And they're fireproofed. This building was fireproofed as well. So it falls as fast as a bowling ball would fall off the side of the building. And the bowling ball has no resistance. That's how it can fall at free fall. This building had all that resistance I described, and yet it's falling as fast as if there were no resistance. What can create that? Well, the only thing that can remove that resistance, the 80 columns on each floor, is explosives. And those columns have to be removed within a tenth of a second of each other on each floor. Any deviation in that pattern, and this building will begin to tip over. It'll begin to fall, twist, groan, moan. It would slow down if there was, if that resistance weren't moved. So we know, and it looks exactly, by the way, of the videos, exactly like an explosive-controlled demolition, for instance, that we've all seen in the old hotels in Las Vegas.
Yeah, my hometown, where we preserve nothing and blow it all to hell.
Yeah, and yet NIST did not seriously examine the hypothesis of explosive-controlled demolition, even though every high-rise that has ever come down has been an explosive-controlled demolition, and it looked exactly like that. They went straight for their favorite hypothesis, destruction by fire, and tried to justify it, and they did a poor job of it. Their computer models don't even show a similar set of circumstances. Well, they don't show the configuration, the straight down collapse of this building. They show what would have happened if there was any kind of a natural collapse, warping on the exterior and a beginning of tipping over. So they can't even get their own computer models to mimic the reality that we see.
Well, I'll tell you something, Richard, that I found amazing was the beautiful pre-positioned camera shot that we all got to see.
Well, there was a number of them, about seven beautiful shots.
Absolutely wonderful, as if to, let's set this up, make sure we document it from all angles. But the thing is the documentation of this whole building collapsing does nothing but dispel the theory that office fires caused the main structure to collapse.
That's correct. We were very lucky because apparently this building was supposed to have gone down in the morning, because CNN, for instance, announced that it collapsed in the morning. They say a 50-story building collapsed. There's massive at 10:45. This was announced at 11:07. Had it gone down at that time, 10:45, it would have been completely enshrouded in the massive debris cloud that was created by the Twin Towers.
I remember that because I was watching CNN at the time.
Oh, and you actually remember, I didn't know this about Building 7. Like most architects and engineers throughout the country know nothing about this third worst structural failure in modern history. And they're just shocked, like I was, when they find out about it. And in fact, talk about foreknowledge, CNN announced the collapse of this building at 5 o'clock, 20 minutes before it actually happened. And they give the reasons, due to structural weakening. Well, again, no steel, it was on fire. It had some small isolated pockets of fire, which are the official cause of this building's collapse. But none of those fires have ever caused collapse in a steel frame skyscraper. So we want to know, you know, how the BBC was so psychic in their pronouncement of its collapse. There's lots of questions here, especially in the debris pile. First responders find pools of molten iron. And this is documented with photos. It turns out to be molten iron. They call it molten steel, but the chemical analysis turns out to it's molten iron. Well, we haven't used molten iron in skyscrapers as the structural members in skyscrapers for 100 years. Where does the molten iron come from?
And the question is, how old was this building? 30 years old?
No, it was built in the 80s.
Oh, wow, not even 30.
So
okay.
Maybe 20. So where does it come from? Well, thermite incendiaries create molten iron as their byproduct. Thermite is an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter.
Yeah, and it's pretty impressive. I've actually seen some demos when I contracted with DOD. It's pretty impressive stuff.
Oh, it's incredible! It's a conflagration. This incendiary, it gets 4,500 degrees. Now, the molten iron it takes 2,700 degrees to melt steel or iron. The office fires are only getting to be up about 600 to 1,500 degrees at the max. That's half the temperature of molten what's required to melt the steel or create molten iron. So the official story can't possibly account for these temperatures, and those responsible for that official story, John Gross and Shyam Sunder of NIST, the National Institute for Standards and Technology, they deny that it exists, and yet there's all this video and photographic and other documentary evidence. In fact, FEMA documents the melting of steel, the only piece that was saved from the structure, from World Trade Center 7, the rest being shipped off to China before the report came out in May of 2002 saying, hey, we have no idea how this building came down. Maybe it was by fire. I mean, they pulled the rug out from under their best hypothesis, and yet all the steel was sent to China for recycling. In other words, this evidence was destroyed. It's the illegal destruction of evidence, and yet one piece was saved. What do they find in it? Intergranular melting.
Yes.
Rapid oxidation, sulfidation, evaporation of the ends of these beams.
Which is the perfect way, Richard, to cover something up, is to destroy everything. A perfect way.
Yeah.
There was a story about a small town sheriff, a small county sheriff in a small town, that was behind a murder-suicide of a husband and wife that was entirely speculatory, and he ruled it a murder-suicide and had them cremated the very next day so there'd be no evidence. So this is just a much larger scale of exactly the same thing.
It is, and it's extremely disturbing to the 1,360 architects and engineers that I represent. We want a new investigation into this whole matter, not just of Building 7, but the Twin Towers as well. Because when we start to look at the Twin Towers, and we will be doing that, by the way, tomorrow night, Saturday night, at 6 p.m. at the Palace Station Hotel in Las Vegas. Point by point, videos, photos, eyewitness testimony, government documentation, as we mentioned in the FEMA's Appendix C, documents, hot sulfur corrosion attack on the steel. Well, where did the sulfur come from? Sulfur is added to thermite to become thermate. It lowers the melting point of steel so that it can attack it. It certainly didn't come from the gypsum board.
It's like carpet bombing an enemy before you go in there with the tanks and the ground guys. You soften it up a little bit, and that's what the material is used for, yeah.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, and we're told that it came from the calcium sulfate in the gypsum board. Well, it couldn't have, because that's an inert bonded ingredient in gypsum board. The gypsum board is used to protect the steel structures. It's never attacked it before.
Now, Richard, hold on just a moment. We're headed into the second break, so we're going to go to that real quick. Again, folks, Richard Gage is going to be at the Palace Station Hotel Casino Saturday. That's going to be the 20th of November, and that's on, Interstate 15 in Sahara. We'll be back right after these words, continuing on. You're with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
RonanTactical.com has certified concealed carry training specialists that travel to you and your group of self-protection advocates. Organize a group of friends, family, or co-workers who take their responsibility of self-protection seriously, and RonanTactical.com will send out a certified training specialist who will provide a course of instruction that will get you and your group certified to carry concealed in over 30 states while providing you, the organizer, a commission for organizing the event. Do you travel for work, family, or vacation and want to remain armed and safe when traveling? Contact RonanTactical.com for details on staying home and having one of our certified professionals travel to you to provide the training and credentials for you and your group to safely and legally carry concealed in over 30 states. Call 888-416-4809 or go online to RonanTactical.com.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Again, welcome back from the break, folks. We have Richard Gage, the guy behind Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. You can check out his website at ae911truth.org. He will be speaking in Las Vegas this Saturday, tomorrow on the 20th, at Palace Station at 6 p.m., Palace Station Hotel Casino, part of Station Casino's properties. It is on Sahara Avenue and Interstate 15, just about... not even a mile from the Las Vegas Strip, if you happen to be in Las Vegas, or you'll be there. So, Richard, we're talking about thermite and gypsum board and things such as that as we were exiting the last break, and you were dispelling the official accounting of the garbage that they're trying to feed to us of this controlled demolition building that went down, specifically WTC number 7. Carry on.
Yeah, and the building 7 is the we call it the smoking gun of 9/11, because if Building 7 was a controlled demolition, and virtually everyone who looks at the evidence agrees that that's the case, the problem, of course, is that we haven't seen the evidence from the government, from the media, from the official reports. Once the architects and engineers in the audiences that I speak to, and they agree with us, and most of them end up signing the petition, demanding a new investigation of these matters. I've spoken to groups of 100 to 700 throughout the world in 17 countries and 30 American cities and 150 presentations. And by a show of hands, those who come in skeptical of our position, 80 to 90% of them will end up agreeing with us at the end of the presentations.
Now, Richard, I have to tell you, I did a little bit of research before we had you on, and there's a little bit of skepticism across the internet of people who are in your industry that, you know, they're just, again, they're skeptical of what you say. But if you read what they're skeptical about, it really doesn't hold water. It's concentrating on the peas and not the steak, and going after one small little aspect of the theories that are going on and ignoring the main issue that you're bringing up with tower number 7. So the skepticism out there is very, very thin, very weak, and very lightly veiled.
That's what I found to be true, and most of it's not in our industry. The architects and engineers are largely unaware of this evidence. And, you know, they'll like I, before 9/11, they being unaware of the evidence, they will call us conspiracy theorists. But when they actually look at the evidence, they do agree with us. And there are only a few engineers out there, and I'm not aware of any architects, who, after looking at the evidence, hold to their former positions of supporting the official story. Jet plane impacts and fires, for instance, bringing down the Twin Towers. Let's look at the Twin Towers. Speaking of that, we're told that this is a gravitational collapse due to structural weakening by fire, because most of the jet fuel burns up outside the building, and the rest of it burns up in 10 minutes, according to the official story. After that, we have normal office fires, and of course, damage from the jet plane impacts. The problem is, the whole story here is that above the point of jet plane impacts, you have this huge mass which drives the rest of the building down to the ground. Well, there's so many problems here. First, the speed at which that happens is about 12 seconds in each of the two Twin Towers. That's almost free fall acceleration. You have 80,000 tons of structural steel below, which is 5 to 20 times stronger than it needed to be to resist any kind of a collapse. So how could it happen almost at free fall acceleration?
Yeah, and just so some folks out there understand this free fall acceleration, we understood this with Sir Isaac Newton climbing up with the different lead balls on the top of the Tower of Pisa back in the 1600s and realized that as long as something has about the same density but not necessarily the same weight, it's going to fall at essentially the same rate, which is 32 feet per second per second. So what we're talking about is if somebody was on top of WTC, the South Tower, and dropped a ball at the time the North Tower went down, that lead ball would have hit the ground about the same time that the roof collapsed, basically eliminating all of the atmospheric resistance due to internal explosions that we are being told actually didn't happen, but all the evidence shows that, in fact, it did in these humongous towers.
And let's look at that evidence. In the case of the North Tower, the 15-story section would have to drive straight down through the path of greatest resistance, the 80,000 tons of structural steel. And that's cold, hard, intact steel below that gets stronger and stronger and stronger, almost solid steel beams, 47 massive core columns resisting this load inside. And this massive perimeter structure around that, around the outside, which, because these buildings were designed to resist 140-mile-an-hour winds, they end up being 20 times stronger in resisting the gravity loads. And yet it fell so fast.
And we'll get into the specifics of that, Richard, as soon as we come back from this next break. Folks, stay tuned. You've got special guest Richard Gage called in right here with your host Bill Carnes on 2A Radio.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
Again, welcome back from the break, folks. We have Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, which is ae911truth.org, on the line. We were just getting into the collapse of the main WTC towers, where you're talking about the top 15 floors above the impact allegedly caused all the 80 floors below it to start collapsing, and we're getting into really kind of the science and engineering specifics of that.
But not only could this upper story, this upper block, this upper section above the point of jet plane impacts in the North Tower, this 15-story section, not only could it not drive the rest of the building down, but it's been destroyed itself in the first 4 seconds. You can see that in the videos, and all these videos are available on our DVD, which is called 9/11 Blueprint for Truth. It's extraordinary, and you can watch that on our website, ae911truth.org. And so the problem is that it's almost like a mini controlled demolition. It looks very much like Building 7, as a matter of fact. For this 15-story section, it's destroying itself in the first 4 seconds, imploding in on itself, such that after that, there is nothing left to drive the rest of the building down at any speed. After that, what we see is this incredible array of explosions occurring, blowing outward, upward, with these pyroclastic-like clouds. That comes from the term from volcanoes. In fact, it looks like a volcano with a geometry that's symmetrical, upward, outward, arching streamers in this incredible plume of pulverized concrete and gases, hot gases from these explosives. There's 90,000 tons of concrete flooring in these buildings in 110 floors, and you can see it pulverizing in midair all the way down, reflecting the bands of explosions that the first responders describe, wrapping all the way around the building like a belt. Pop, pop, pop.
Yeah, and some that were actually caught on video as well.
Oh, many of them. In fact, below this so-called crush zone, which is an explosion zone, really, 20, 40, and even 60 stories below this zone, we have explosions clearly, visibly going off that are blowing out of the side of the building at 160 to 200 feet per second. These are pulverized building materials. We're told these are puffs of air being produced by this piston. Well, the piston was destroyed in the first 4 seconds, so they're not that. And they're occurring at these incredible speeds that can only be driven by explosives. And they occur at the midpoints in the middle of the facades. This is obviously an engineered pattern set of explosions. And once people see this, they go, oh, my God, you're right. Why didn't I see this? I asked myself, why didn't I see this 4 years ago? It's very embarrassing as an architect to see what is really an extremely explosive event, and yet we're told by the experts immediately, while we're in this state of shock, we're told by the experts that this is a pancaking collapse due to structural weakening by fire.
Yeah, the big question is, who are the experts and what are their background? Where do they come from? And more importantly, who's signing their paycheck? That really determines how much of an expert they really are.
Yes, well, it turns out that 90% of them are on federal contracts. All of the they're not independent, and these volunteers that were hauled out of the American Society of Civil Engineers to examine this in very early on all had government contracts, and they all worked themselves into the FEMA reports, which were the next set of reports, and they all worked them, most of them, into the NIST report.
Oh, imagine that. Imagine that they were all connected.
It's a very closed society. And this, back to the North Tower, what we see after that first 4 seconds is all of these perimeter wall units, average weight about 9 tons, being expelled like cannonballs laterally out of the side of the Twin Towers at 60 to 70 miles per hour, landing up to 600 feet away. And this physics analysis is all done and available on our DVD to see, and we'll be talking about it in Las Vegas at the Palace Station Hotel Saturday night at 6 p.m. We're going to bring all this evidence out, including the fact, the photos of the debris pile, because what we would expect to see in a pancaking collapse is a stack of pancaked floors down there, like 110 of them, stacked 20 stories tall. And these were 4-inch thick concrete. Again, that's all been pulverized in midair up above. That's what happened to it. 220 acres of metal decking pulverized to metal filings, which are found in all the World Trade Center dust, which blanketed lower Manhattan in a 4 to 12-inch thick layer. We would have expected that concrete to be in those piles, but what we see instead is a two-story pile or so of debris, including core columns, perimeter columns, aluminum cladding. There are no floors. There's no concrete. It's all in this dust.
Yeah, and you're talking about pre-stressed, formed concrete that has really high PSI ratings to it. And this stuff doesn't just poof into dust. It's almost like man-made marble of sorts. It's a very strong stone.
It is. It's not pre-stressed though, but it is significant. And think of that metal decking, corrugated metal decking, 220 acres of it, in all together in both twin towers, because each of these floors are an acre in size, and 10,000 floor trusses, and 10,000 or so file cabinets. These are steel, and they're gone. They couldn't find one file cabinet, save one that's the size of a basketball that was down in the basement. There was some incredibly powerful explosive, many, many multiple explosives to create this kind of thing. And in fact, we find the evidence of those explosives in all the World Trade Center dust. This is an extraordinary find. It starts with the USGS, the U.S. Geological Survey, which finds these previously molten iron spheres, the size of the diameter of a human hair, billions and billions of them. All the samples have them. Up to 6% of some of these samples are composed of these molten iron spheres. Well, again, how did they get to be molten? Molten iron takes over 2,700 degrees. The jet fuel is only burning at a maximum of 1,000 to 1,600 degrees. These molten iron spheres have the evidence, chemical evidence of thermite in them, manganese, there's silica, aluminum. How did they get formed into spheres? Well, if you had thousands of cutter charges, thermite cutter charges, which can be used, by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter, there are patented devices for this to cut through structural steel. And throughout the columns and beams in the building, under explosive conditions, the byproduct of thermite is, again, molten iron. So that pressure from the explosives would atomize that liquid molten iron. And what happens to liquid when it's atomized, like out of a spray bottle? Those are spheres, tens of thousands or millions of spheres, even out of a spray bottle. These then cool, and they fall with all of the dust. Now, that is the only rational explanation for these billions of spheres in all of the dust samples.
Absolutely.
There's no other, you know, they say, oh, that must have come from the cleaning equipment. Well, I mean, the iron workers, you know, cutting torches and so forth. Well, these samples, many of them are collected, some of them are collected on top of high-rises. There's no, you know, there's not clean, iron workers aren't going to get balls of iron up there, and on the bridge, the Brooklyn Bridge, 10 minutes after the collapse of these buildings, one sample was collected. So we know it's not contaminated in that way. But the story gets worse. This international team of scientists also find, in all of their samples, curiously small, red-gray chips. These are 16th of an inch large, these chips. They're red on one side, gray on the other. They come up to the magnet because they have iron in them. But these iron oxide particles in the red side of these gray chips are 1,000 times smaller than a human hair. And the aluminum particles are also 1,000 times smaller than a human hair. These are nanoparticles of aluminum and iron oxide intimately mixed and proportioned perfectly to become what? Thermite, and they're set in an organic bed of carbon, silica, and oxygen, and this is something we know about. It was documented by Lawrence Livermore Lab and Los Alamos Lab before 9/11. It's called super thermite. It's called nano thermite. This is
really the latest technology of the thermites.
Oh yeah, it's extremely sophisticated, and it's made only in the most advanced defense contracting laboratories. So we're looking at something that is different than the official story, 19 fundamentalist hijackers. We don't think this can be made in a cave in Afghanistan. In fact, it can't. That's a real problem for the official story. So this material is documented by this team of international scientists in the Bentham Open Chemical Physics Journal. It stands uncontested for the last year and a half. They say, oh, that's just paint. Well, paint does not have the qualities that I just described. Paint doesn't blow up at 420 degrees centigrade in a heater like this material did when they raised the temperature in this differential scanning calorimeter. And guess what happens when these ignite at that temperature? They produce what? Thousands of these small spheres that have the exact chemical makeup as the spheres that officials find in all the World Trade Center dust spheres.
Imagine that.
So it all ties together, this hypothesis, all the evidence. It's very clear, and people will see this and come to the same conclusions as we have on Saturday night.
How many times a year do you travel and give these different speeches? You'll be in Las Vegas Saturday, tomorrow night. How often do you actually go out and give these speeches?
At least twice a month, average. We'll be going to Boston next to speak at the Tea Party convention they're having there in December. And just got back from, where was I? Oklahoma City. We went there, and by the way, once people start looking into Oklahoma City, they find some real problems with the official story.
Some real similarities to the Oklahoma City bombing at the Murrah Federal Building, I would take it.
Extremely disturbing. Yes, that's what I'm referring to.
Excellent. Now, on your website, I would imagine it's under the Events tab. Is that where you're actually your calendar is for your travel and speeches?
Yes, that's right. Everywhere we go is listed there.
Now, here's a question for you. You've looked very hard at the WTC-7, but at the Twin Towers, you said you want to look into that a little bit more. We've been speaking about that. Really, what are kind of the plans of the AE 9/11 for Truth group? What are the plans for looking at the two main towers?
Well, we've looked at the evidence. I've highlighted it for your listeners today, and it's all available on our website, in our DVD, in our brochures, in our newspaper, the 9/11 Investigator. We have an online store where these things can be purchased. They can also be downloaded and printed for free. The evidence is available. We're ready to present it. In fact, Senator Cantwell of Washington has asked us to present a formal request for a Senate hearing on this subject, and we're very hopeful that it comes out. Geraldo Rivera, a week ago, had on his show one of our engineers, and he was very impressed with the evidence by the 1,200 to 1,300 engineers, as he mentioned it. So I encourage everybody to look at Geraldo Rivera's 10-minute clip from Geraldo at Large on Fox TV, which is on our website right on the front page also. Yeah, so we continue to look deeper into the Twin Towers, but we don't need to look any deeper to be 100% convinced that these are explosive controlled demolitions using nanothermite incendiaries. And why, by the way, would somebody use thermite and or nanothermite in the destruction of these three high-rises on 9/11. Well, these are deceptive controlled demolitions. If somebody wanted to blame something on fire, they wouldn't use high energy explosives like C4 or RDX, which produce extremely bright flashes and loud bangs. You'd have to use something else. So thermite appears to be what they decided to use, And fortunately for those of you who are after the truth in these matters, that evidence is very abundant, the liquid molten iron with all of the chemical evidence. So they had to leave that signature behind.
Richard, we'll be right back after this final break and bring you into the final segment to clear to finish up. We'll be right back right after these words.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on!
All right, folks, welcome back from the break. Again, we're speaking with Richard Gage, chief architect, and really the muscle behind AE911truth.org. Richard, we're just about to polish up the show. We've only got about 3 minutes or so left. So tell us what it is. If somebody comes to one of these events, if somebody's going to come to the event in Las Vegas at Palace Station on the 20th, this Saturday night, tomorrow night, 6 p.m., again, that's on Sahara and I-15, tell us what sort of presentation we can look forward to.
Well, we'll be walking through the evidence, starting with Building 7, ending with the Twin Towers and all of this molten metal, iron microspheres, small nanothermite chips found in the dust, piece by piece with lots of videos, lots of photos, audios of the first responders, a whole lot of firemen, journalists. All of this evidence that has been denied, obfuscated by the official stories. And we'll be answering questions. Also, many people ask, for instance, well, how could they have access to the Twin Towers? Well, if you had access to the elevator shafts in there, you would have access to the core columns and beams, and you could plant these explosives there. Of course, it'd be easier if you had a cover operation such as an elevator modernization when you'd have an excuse to be working in there. And fortunately for us now, looking back, we know that that was exactly what was going on, the world's largest elevator modernization. It was extraordinary. Ace Elevator had 85 employees in there. We want an investigation of Ace Elevator. You know, that's going to be key. And the security company, of course.
And who had Ace Elevator was in there how long before this alleged attack?
Nine months.
Okay.
This gives them plenty of time to plant several tons. I mean, we're talking perhaps up to, I don't know, 100 tons of explosives. Now, you wouldn't sneak that by security. So we want an investigation of Securicom, Stratasec, whose contract ended, by the way, on 9/11. Which is quite curious.
Imagine.
And we want who sits on the board of directors of that security company? These are very important questions. They turn out to be very curious individuals, too.
Well, it certainly sounds that way. Richard, thanks so much for calling in. I really appreciate this. I will be in Vegas Saturday night. I live about 45, 50 miles outside of town. As a matter of fact, Palace Station is my old stomping grounds. So I will be there Saturday night, and I look forward to shaking your hand then.
Definitely, Bill. Thank you.
Thanks a bunch. Folks, I want to thank Richard Gage so much for calling in. We will be back next week. Have a great weekend.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com. I will not.